Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
MSW Media.
They might be giants that have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And they might be giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now they might be giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one. This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated. Like, that there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans, one rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 25 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It is Wednesday, July 7th. I'm your co-host, Andrew Torres, and back from a well-deserved beach vacation is my esteemed co-host, Allison Gill. Allison, welcome back.
Thank you. I missed everyone. It's great to be back. I came back for the cats and for the shows, really, honestly.
Okay.
That's why I'm here.
I won't ask which order, but you know, that's those are two worthy things. That's fair.
Well, the cats are within earshot, so.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We have a fantastic show for you today. But first, as always, we need to thank our patrons who support the show over at patreon.com/aisle45pod. For as little as a dollar an episode, you get the show ad-free, we have a hangout coming up, and it's a great way to say you love the show and you want this partnership to continue. So,
you do.
Yes, thank you. This week to the new patrons, Don Nelson, Joshua Bodwin, Stephen James or Stephen James, James Frazier, and Ellie and Micah, Infants at Law.
You know, if there's one thing the world needs right now, it is new law babies. So, you know, if you're a law baby, steal mommy's credit card and head on over to patreon.com/aisle45pod. And now I guess we can head to the A block.
Awesome. Well, this story broke last week. You knew we were going to talk about it. The Manhattan District Attorney, Cy Vance, and his office. Working hand in hand with New York Attorney General Letitia James and former U.S. Attorney Pomerantz and a really great forensics accounting firm that worked with the Mueller investigation, has indicted the Trump Organization and CFO Alan Weisselberg, two Trump entities and CFO Alan Weisselberg. They perp walked him, which I actually put down my pina colada and tacos to tweet out. It was glorious. But now we have the thing you've been waiting for, Andrew, the actual text of the 15-count indictment.
Oh, yeah, documents. I am so happy. So, let's start at the beginning. 15-count indictment. Count one is what gets the most detail because this is telling the story. Although, you know, as we get into it, you'll see that I think some of the other counts are more serious. But count one is New York Penal Law 190.651B, a scheme to defraud in the first degree. This is a Class E felony. So that is the most minor felony at New York law.
Okay, so Class A is the highest and Class E is the lowest? Okay.
Yep, they do A1, A2, and they go down to E. to be guilty of a scheme to defraud in the first degree, a person is guilty when he engages in a scheme constituting a systematic ongoing course of conduct with intent to defraud more than one person or to obtain property from more than one person by false or fraudulent pretenses, representations, or promises, and so obtains property with a value in excess of $1,000 from one or more such persons.
So who was the person or people defrauded here in count one?
Yeah, and this is going to be a theme throughout this indictment. The people, in this case, the corporate people who were defrauded here are the IRS, the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance, and the New York City Department of Finance. So basically it is your federal, state, and local taxes. And this is going to come through again and again.
Yeah, I noticed the word federal popped up quite a few times. And, I love this indictment. I think this is so well done. So these are allegations set forth in paragraph four that for 16 years, from 2005 to June 30th, 2021, as they were writing, as the ink was drying on this indictment, that's it's still going on.
You would think they would stop criming when, you know, they said, hey, we're looking at you for all the crimes, but nope.
No.
Not the Trump org, not Alan Weisselberg. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. But the Trump org meant to compensate Weisselberg and other Trump org executives off the books with compensation that was indirect and disguised so as to understate their total income and pay less taxes. Now, Andrew, this seems to me like one of those things that we talked about with Manafort and why they were able to go back so many years without running afoul of statute of limitations is because it's all connected, right? The scheme was ongoing.
That is exactly right. And so you will see when we get into some of the specific charges for false statements that those will only look back a certain number of years. Mm. But yeah, if your conspiracy is ongoing and we find out about it now, we can absolutely go back and look at the beginning of the conspiracy. We can look at all of the events in furtherance thereof. And boy, as you point out, there's a 16-year history here. And, you know, it's sort of notwithstanding Donald Trump's barely coherent rally over the weekend. I hope you were either on a plane or on a beach or something. And so you missed this. But, you know, it literally was subliterate. But Donald Trump, as far as I could tell, he was saying, like, and who pays taxes on company cars? Who does that? Well, the answer is people who don't commit crimes, right? are the ones who do. This is not just like a technical misclassification, like, oh, you know, you should have filled out form 9J-X and, you know. No, this is an allegation that at the highest levels, the Trump organization intentionally created a scheme so that the beneficiaries to that scheme would receive, and this is a direct quote from paragraph five, quote, substantial portions of their income effectively under the table, right? We all know what that is, right? And that's what this, taken largely, right? That's what this indictment is about. It is saying, hey, the Trump org decided to pay Alan Weisselberg, and as you pointed out, other Trump org executives, not named in this indictment yet, under the table so as to minimize the tax burden on both of them.
Yeah, and these allegations are particularly targeted at Weisselberg, who is alleged to have received $1.76 million in indirect employee compensation in ways that were designed to allow both the Trump organization and Weisselberg not to have to pay taxes, report taxes on their respective filings, right? Because the Trump organization doesn't have to pay payroll taxes on that under the table stuff, nor does Weisselberg. And then, of course, Weisselberg is alleged to have deliberately left it off his tax returns and hidden the information from his personal tax preparer. Sounds like Manafort.
Yeah, all of that. And then, you know, I want to add the infomercial, like, but wait, there's more, right? what you have seen reported over the past week, right? If you've gotten your news from reputable sources, is just how thorough this count one is, right? And what it reminds me of is when we talked about it on this show, but we broke down the New York civil complaint against the National Rifle Association in detail on opening arguments, right? And again, Tish James's office, right? And what struck us when we were taking a look at that NRA complaint was how thorough the allegations were, right? You get very, very specific numbers, and that tells the defendant, oh, hey, look, like, we're not just saying we think there might be X here. It's saying we have indisputable documentary proof of your wrongdoing. And I would point out, we were one of the first places to say this is not just a political hit on the NRA. Like, this is super serious, and it drove the NRA to declare bankruptcy. So, you know, when you see this level of detail in the numbers in an indictment, it should give you, you know, you could make it up, but in general, the best bet is they have way more than they're letting on.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of paragraph five, talking about Weisselberg hiding the fact that he lived in New York, is said to, yeah, because he, you know, doesn't live in New York, sure. He hiding the fact he did. So he evaded approximately, what, $556,385 in taxes, $106,568 in state taxes. The half a million is federal, $100,000 plus in state, and $238,159 in city, New York City taxes. And he also took a bunch of inappropriate refunds. So you're saying Cy Vance didn't just make up that $556,385. That's pretty specific.
Yeah, six significant figures tells you that they have documents, right? And that should make you worry if you are Alan Weisselberg or Alan Weisselberg's attorney.
Yeah, yeah, and all this is just count one, right? But it keeps going. The Trump org paid Weisselberg's rent, which he never disclosed. Yep. They paid his utilities and garage payments.
That's a big deal in New York City.
Yes. Yes, it is. They paid tuition for Weisselberg's grandkids, which we've talked about. They paid for two cars. They paid for personal expenses like beds and beds and flat screen TVs, carpeting, furniture. Who, by the way, who uses carpeting still? Whatever.
Hardwood is the way to go.
There were even multiple slush funds that Weisselberg used to get. End of the year bonuses tax free, and even just what seemed to basically be bags of cash.
that there are expenses that would just be ticketed through as Trump org expenses that, as far as we can tell, were just checks that Weisselberg cashed. Right. It's extensive.
Yeah, and it goes on for 13 pages. I mean,
it does. And let's be super clear about this. We keep saying they. But and this is really the brilliance of the indictment. Weisselberg was the CFO. He's the guy who signed all of these checks. He falsified all of these records. And so there are really only two possibilities from a legal standpoint, right? Either Weisselberg went rogue. He did all of this himself. And he defrauded the Trump org, and nobody ever approved of any of this. At which point, Weisselberg is going to be penniless. He's going to be required to reimburse the Trump organization, right? And he will spend some time in jail, right? Or alternatively, he could say, yeah, I know that's my signature on there, but I'm just the CFO. I report to a certain person not named in this indictment, whose last name is on the front of the building, who told me all of this was okay.
Yeah, and you bring up a really important point, Andrew, that if he takes the fall for this, like if when him and Trump met up at Trump Tower recently and decided that, you know, as the consigliere of this mafia enterprise, he was going to be the fall guy, he would have to pay. He would have to say, it was all me, I went rogue, I'm rogue, I'm a maverick. And he would have to pay back all of that, all that money in restitution. And, you know, I think it's, you know, also worth noting that, I don't know, there just seems like this can't be the only crime. This is such a, I mean, it only goes back to 2005. He's been there since 1973. Come on. You know.
Right. The first 30 years were figuring out what crimes were okay, right?
Right.
It took a while to get acclimated.
I sort of wonder why they started this particular scheme in 2005. I mean, that'll be interesting to learn. But that leads us to the part that's probably gotten the most speculation, which is count two, which is a fourth degree conspiracy charge between the named defendants here and unindicted co-conspirator one to do the scheme we just talked about. And I think because a lot of people remember Trump being not so subtly referred to as individual one in the Michael Cohen indictment, people are thinking this is Trump. But that's not the case.
Yeah, it's not clear from the face of the indictment that it is Trump. It's also not clear that it's not Trump, right? I know I have seen you and I've probably seen the same reporting from the inside that says ostensibly this is somebody else. But let me explain the presence of unindicted co-conspirator number one in this indictment. Here's why it's in there. And this is something that I haven't seen anybody else explain. So, you know, good on you guys for listening to Clean Up on Aisle 45. So here's the thing. If Weisselberg was acting on behalf of the Trump Org, right? He's pled not guilty. Part of pleading not guilty is I did not do the crimes, right? That is, I was authorized to do everything I did, and everything I did on behalf of the company was legal, right? Then he was acting in an official capacity. He was the agent for the Trump Organization, right? And if you're the agent for the Trump Organization, you cannot have a conspiracy with yourself, right? So you can't prove conspiracy charges between Weisselberg and Trump and the Trump Org if Weisselberg was acting within the scope of directed authority. Okay. So this is part of the inference as to why it might be Trump on sort of two levels here, right? The first is, for there to be a legal conspiracy at all, you have to have someone outside that decision-making process to have conspired with. And the allegation against unindicted co-conspirator number one, right, is that, you know, this was somebody who was part of the planning process. Well, it could be Trump, right? It could be one of his dipshit kids acting in their personal capacities. I suppose it could be Matthew Calamari acting, you know, having gone rogue, right? And good old Calamari. And then once you get beyond that, right, you're talking about maybe a whistleblower accountant over at Mazars. I don't know, but there aren't too many people it could be. And the only reason to bring these allegations is if you want to hold open the possibility that Weisselberg was authorized to do everything he did. And there are only a handful of people that could have authorized him to do that. So that's part of where the enlightened speculation comes from.
Yeah, well, that and, you know, Weisselberg's lawyers were very careful in their, you know, response statement to not say anything that would take cooperation off the table or make cooperation difficult, which was a smart move. And he's got good lawyers. Weisselberg's got good lawyers. This isn't like the Kraken or the Elite Strike Force. you know, I've also heard reports that it's McConney, the controller. And that's my personal opinion. We know he's cooperating, or at least he's been given immunity because he's testified before the special grand jury. And in New York, you get that immunity. You can't be a target. And so I think that might be where they got this second set of books, because if you see Andrew later on, they have a thing where somebody testified to the grand jury that Weisselberg directed them to take his name approval off of a document. And, you know, going back to the old federal thing and hoping the feds get involved here, that seems like obstruction of justice. But, you know, anyway, I mean, you could speculate all day about this. So we'll see what happens, but I think this is just the beginning. Now, the allegation is the named defendants, that's Trump, Org, and Weisselberg, and others, including unindicted co-conspirator one, agreed to and implemented a compensation scheme with the object of enabling Weisselberg to underreport his income and thereby evade taxes. So who else, like you said, is in the position to agree to implement it? It's not McConney.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple things you said there that I think are really worth pausing over, right? The first is, okay, lawyers talk like this, and sometimes we will say the named defendants and others, including unindicted co-conspirator number one, and we only mean and unindicted co-conspirator. But sometimes you leave that including because you mean there are people who are not at all named in this indictment who could be part of that conspiracy. And as you point out, right, like, you know, generally speaking, exceptions, you don't conspire with your accountant. You don't conspire. Right. Well, I mean, you know, I guess in the Jeffrey Skilling case, you know, Ken Lay conspired with his auditors. But like it's. There's a small universe, and I think we should not pause lightly over the possibility that this refers to someone we care about going to jail.
Yeah, or the other including part does. Yep. And you know, they did allude to Trump directly, I mean indirectly, I should say, in a couple other things when they talked about somebody signed the lease on those apartments, and there's only one person that could sign the lease on those apartments. And also signing the checks for tuition. I mean, they sort of, they edge up to it, but they don't go right into it.
This is, if you are a rational Donald Trump, and I realize that's an oxymoron, or a rational Donald Trump lawyer, and I realize that's an oxymoron, this would have that person, that hypothetical non-existent person, nervous, right? If this was one of my clients, I would be very, very scared as to, you know, if this were referring potentially to one of my clients, I'd be like, okay, you're in trouble.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Just do cocaine about it. It'll be fine.
Well, you know.
I have some questions about the seriousness of these counts, a couple of these counts, but we do have to take a quick break. So everybody stick around. We will be right back. Hey, everybody. It's Allison Gill for Cleanup on Aisle 45. Have you ever had an acne breakout come at the worst possible moment? I have. I had some maskne happen before I had to appear on television. It was awful. But I need to tell you that a lot of this home remedy skincare stuff doesn't work, or it's either actually bad for your skin. And that is why I have now tried, and I love, and I'm excited to partner with Apostrophe. They sponsor this episode. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed oral and topical medications that are clinically proven to help clear acne. We love science. Apostrophe connects you with a board-certified dermatologist. We also love those who will create a personalized treatment plan that is perfectly tailored to your unique skin. You just fill out Apostrophe's online quiz about your skin goals and your medical history, snap a few selfies of your skin, and your dermatologist will create you a customized treatment plan right there on the spot. Apostrophe treats acne, and they can also help hit your other skincare goals like reducing redness, wrinkles, and even dark spots. My personal skincare goals are dark spots, those fine lines around my eyes, and of course, acne. I'm supposed to get sick clemency at my age, but I haven't received it yet. Submitting for my first visit was quick and easy. I did not have to schedule an appointment. Best of all, I didn't have to go to the pharmacy and wait in line to get my meds. They sent them directly to my house with a very cute postcard and little stickers to personalize my bottle. It was really awesome. And we have a special deal for you. You can save $15 off your first visit, making your first visit only $5. With a board-certified dermatologist, where are you going to find a specialized board-certified dermatologist referral for $5? Anyway, you get to talk to this board-certified dermatologist at apostrophe.com/cleanup, all one word, cleanup. When you use our code, all one word, cleanup. This code is only available to you. To get started, again, go to apostrophe.com/cleanup and click begin visit. Then use the code cleanup, all one word, at sign up, and you'll get $15 off your dermatology visit. That's apostrophe, apostrophe.com/cleanup, and use the code cleanup, all one word, to get your dermatology visit and save $15. And we thank Apostrophe so much for sponsoring the show. All right, everybody, welcome back to Cleanup on Aisle 45. Before the break, I was getting ready to ask you, Andrew, about count two, because this is the conspiracy count, right? You can't have a conspiracy with yourself. I mean,
yep.
You know, unless we're talking about other things, but we're not. We're talking about the law. And I want to know how serious this count two is, because, you know, we hear a lot, and we've seen this a lot too over the last 4 years. My God, you know, it could spend, Manafort's got, could be 38 years and he gets like 7, you know, so,
yeah, right.
You know, or Papadopoulos gets 14 days, you know, Roger Stone gets 40 months instead of the, you know, 80 to 100 or whatever that were recommended. So I'm kind of wondering, like, you know, you're very good with this table and the things, and I know how it works for federal stuff, but I'm not too good on the state.
Yeah, and New York is very different than the federal system. So let's kind of break down how that works. Count two, fourth degree conspiracy, is New York Penal Law 105.10, subsection 1. That's another Class E felony, right? So the least serious. It alleges that the conspirators agreed to cause the performance of a different felony. Put a pin in that, which in this case is grand larceny. And what's the larceny? Stealing $95,000 from the IRS, right? So you see how all of this is kind of interrelated. This is the conspiracy to steal the $100,000 from the IRS. How this all works out in terms of sentencing is, in New York, for nonviolent felonies, the court always has the option to impose no prison time. Okay. Class E is the least serious. If there is prison time, what you get is you get what's called an indeterminate sentence. Okay. And that is, you know, you think about that like when you watch Law and Order and they say, well, you're going to get 5 to 10 years upstate, or you're going to get 25 years to life, right? That actually is, it's not saying the judge will give you a number between that. That actually becomes your sentence in New York. And so what you have to do is, if you get any prison time at all, you have to serve that minimum amount of prison time. Then you come up for parole. You have a parole hearing. And then if they decide to parole you, you're paroled subject to those conditions. If not, you have regular hearings until you serve out the maximum sentence. Right.
Oh.
So these Class E felonies are a year minimum sentence to 4 years as a maximum sentence, and they are concurrent if they arise out of the same nucleus of operative facts, right? So they're not going to stack. But I'm kind of previewing a little bit the grand larceny count, right? Mm-hmm. That's the count three from that is the conspiracy to do the thing, right? That is a Class C felony. That is the same classification as vehicular homicide when driving drunk, right? So super big, super important felony, maximum of 15 years and a minimum to be set by the court between 1 and 5 years, right? Mm. So, yeah. So they could go, right? Even for if a Class C is nonviolent, the court could say, we convict you of, you know, a dozen Class E felonies and a Class C, and we're not going to give you jail time on any of them. That would be rare in a case like this.
Yeah, but also be concurrent.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And you know, just to interject something here, this whole downplaying of the seriousness of this, or it's only $100,000. It's only not, you know, reporting a Mercedes. It's only not reporting this income. It's only walking away with bags of cash. I think it shows incredible just dickishness to be glib about, oh, so we stole $95,000. You know, that's a significant amount of money to a lot of Americans. I think their inability to recognize that is just, it's not going to go over well, particularly with a jury from New York.
Yeah. I thought Republicans were the party of law and order, right? I don't know where that came from. The whole this is all, I mean, we're ranking the severity of the felonies, right? Like, we are already into serious crime territory with mandatory minimums. Yeah.
They're only the party of law and order when it's black people committing the crimes. That's the only time they're the party. That's what they mean.
that is what they mean. But I do think there was a little bit of, and again, you saw Trump sort of struggling with this, you know, as he's struggling with, you know, basic monosyllabic words. But over the weekend, because usually, right, the sound bite that they can come up with is something that is at least accessible for the average Trump supporter. And the like, come on, who among us pays taxes on the company cars that are given to us is a little bit at odds with, you know, your average MAGA hat
for the working class. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this grand larceny charge that you're talking about, count three, I imagine this is just against Weisselberg.
Yes.
Because, I made the reference to Al Capone over the weekend. I was like, huh, tax evasion, retired to Florida, died of syphilis. It's a lot in common here.
Yep.
I sense a pattern. But the real meat is coming from actual tax fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. Look, that's right. So basically what you're trying to do here, if you view this indictment the way you and I predicted and the way Morgan and I predicted in your absence last week, as squeeze Alan Weisselberg, this is done really, really, really well, right?
Yes,
because, right, the conspiracy charge, right, because it hits both ends, right? The conspiracy charges allow you to gather evidence over a two-decade period. But the downside of that is that those are Class E felonies. Those are the minor felonies. You're talking about a year in jail. And again, Weisselberg is in his 70s, so a year in jail seems pretty significant. The specific tax misstatements and the tax fraud carry harsher penalties, longer mandatory minimums, but you can only look back so many years, right? And so here they were like, okay, great, we're gonna gather together ironclad proof and really, you know, throw the kitchen sink at this guy, and that's what we have here.
Yeah, so that's a fourth, fifth, and sixth counts for criminal tax fraud, third degree. Class D, is that right? Class
yes,
D felony?
Yes.
So if it's the highest count against Weisselberg with no criminal history, he'll argue for no jail time.
Yeah, he will. But again, the more that you pile up, right, they're all nonviolent. The judge will always have the discretion to say no jail time. But if eventually at some point, you know, you look at it and go, all right, this guy, you know, like Paul Manafort, right? This person has defrauded the government out of significant sums of money, and they probably have some, you know, not just restitution to make, but social restitution. They should spend some time behind bars.
Yeah, totally. And it looks like New York defines tax fraud really pretty broadly, as including providing materially false information on a tax return or making a materially false statement during an audit. I imagine the real hitch here is that you have to prove that the defendant's actions were intentional. And that's what's been going on around Twitter. I've been seeing it. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Yes, it is. Yes, it is when there's, you know, when you have to prove intentional, willful knowingness with the intent to defraud. Not all crimes, of course, but these tax crimes have that. And so these three counts are for Weisselberg and the Trump orgs 2014, 2015, and 2016 tax returns. So they're both.
Yes. And so those are just because of the way the felonies are divided under New York state law, those amounts were between $10,000 and $50,000 for each of those tax years. And then for some reason, they decided that they were only going to, you know, commit criming on a slightly lower scale in 2017. So that 2017 tax return is for tax fraud in the fourth degree. That's another E felony because it's between $3,000 and $10,000. But again, right, this is just each and every time. I mean, I really love the way you broke that down. Each and every time you intentionally make a false statement on a tax return or to an auditor, right, that's a separate instance of tax fraud under the New York law. And so if they uncover more of these, they can issue a superseding indictment, as we've talked about. But we have right now at least 4 years of tax returns in which the evidence it was at least sufficient for a grand jury to hand down an indictment that said, yeah, we think a prosecutor can, using the ordinary tools available to prosecutors, right? Which is, you know, you just look around and go, okay, you know, you put X number here. How did you derive X number? Oh, from Y source. Well, Y source doesn't say that. Well, okay. maybe I forgot. Okay, Mr. Weisselberg, how long have you been an accountant, right? 105 years. Great. You know, how often do you forget things, right? And that, you know, I mean, we could, you know, we're more than halfway through the show, so I would love to go through each and every one of these counts. I will tell you, we went through counts 1 through 7. Counts 8 to 11 are just against Weisselberg. They're all first degree filing a false instrument, right? So again, another way to get in the idea from the same nucleus of operative facts. And that looks like each of those four tax returns from 2014 to 2017, that's four more e-felonies. And then 12, 13, 14, 15 are first degree falsifying business records. And again, both against the Trump org and against Weisselberg, four more e-felonies.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about, what I alluded to earlier, count 15. Because it lays out that specific fact that, that definitely puts the screws to Alan Weisselberg. And it's in September 2016, while the former guy was about to be elected president of the United States, elected is in quotes, Weisselberg allegedly instructed a subordinate to remove the notation per Alan Weisselberg from one of the entries in Trump's detailed general ledger regarding those school tuition payments.
Yeah,
we don't know what remove means here, but count 15 says that he altered, erased, obliterated, deleted, removed, and destroyed a true entry into the business records. Now, that could be deleting a computer notation, and we would have backup, or it could be physically whiting something out or erasing a handwritten Trump note with his stupid Sharpie if we have a prior copy. But, you know, I brought up that sounds like it could be federal obstruction of justice. But then you start running into that sort of sovereignty thing where it's got to be one or the other, you know. Now taxes, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that doesn't apply to taxes in New York. You can be in trouble for defrauding New York State, New York City, and the federal tax, IRS. But, you know, for this kind of stuff, it's like, are the feds going to get involved in the IRS stuff, but stay away from this other stuff because they can't, you know, I don't know. It should be interesting to see if the feds get involved at all. But it's the fact that they had a subordinate remove his name. I just keep thinking of Martha Stewart.
that's a great reference in that, you know, I mean, Martha Stewart is one of only a handful of people ever to go to prison for insider trading. And, you know, and it had to do with record keeping. I can see, right? How does per Alan Weisselberg get written on Trump's detailed general ledger, right? And you can come up with an awful lot of other things. But to me, I see it, as you point out, in that big, stupid Sharpie, like Trump writing it in there and then handing it back to his CFO and going, see, you know, I did this for you. And then all of a sudden in 2016, Weisselberg is like, well, maybe I should cover my tracks here. Maybe we should, you know, erase that. We are entirely speculating, but this is the good kind of speculating that we want to be in, right? Mm-hmm. The only way for Weisselberg to defend himself is to say he was authorized by Trump to make those changes. That means flipping on Donald Trump, right? Or again, he can admit to the crime, but if it were me, I'd rather not do that.
Well, his defense will be, I didn't tell anyone to do that. They did it of their own volition. I mean, yeah. You know, he's getting the tongue bath treatment from Trump so far. So I think Trump expects him to stay Roger Stoney, but you know, we'll see.
We will, but it is early, and I know, you know, this has sort of gone through the like pre-hype, post-hype, mid-hype. Like this, you should. This is very, very serious for the reasons we've described.
Yeah, and Tish James has the power to dissolve this corporation. She can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I got to tell you, Andrew. The two sets of books. I mean, what a motherload fucking gold mine. can you imagine finding a second set of books that shows all your credit. That's where they got these exact numbers.
It is. So two things immediately come to mind, right? Number one, it now makes legal sense of the battle over Trump's tax returns, right? Because one of the things you and I have been saying since the very beginning, like I had an accountant come on my show and basically say, like, look, the Trump Org is set up as an LLC pass-through entity. Like, you just aren't going to get, right? There isn't going to be a line item on his W-2 that says, you know, big bag of money from the Russians, right? Like, and the idea was, we're going to get the tax returns, but like tamp down your expectations. Well, now we know at least one of the purposes to which they have been put, right? And that is cross-checking and validating numbers. The second thing I love, like I just keep thinking of, you know, the underboss from Kansas City in Casino who, you know, kept this, the second set of books in order to to have his expenses paid for.
And they're like, thank you very much for these.
So, we can now replace in terms of financial documents. I have been waiting to see the uncooked books from Trump Org have displaced Trump's taxes at the apex of that pyramid.
Yeah. Well, there's, I think personally, a lot more to come. And if you listen to I had a really long conversation with Andrew Weissman, and we talked about the parallels.
Somebody who knows his stuff. Yeah.
Manafort and Gates, and the parallels with Weisselberg and Trump. And we talked about a lot of, you know, can there's tweets be used against him? And I, you know, you can check all that out on, I believe it's Monday's episode of the Daily Beans. And so check it out. And we talk pretty extensively. And he's, you know what? He's a funny guy. He's really funny.
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy
that. No, he's a good guy.
Everybody, we have more cleanup stuff, more good news coming up.
Woo!
But we do have to take a quick break. So we'll be right back. Hey everybody, it's AG, and this portion of the show is sponsored by Monk Pack. I am a snacker, but it is hard to find snacks that fit in with my keto lifestyle. And since I like to snack all day, trying to find healthy snacks is difficult. They have a really bad reputation. They usually don't taste very good. They don't hit the spot. They don't satisfy your cravings. But that is why I absolutely love Monk Pack. Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars contain less than 1 gram of sugar, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and they're only 150 calories, and they taste amazing. They are great for anyone following a keto lifestyle, and the perfect snack for just anyone who's trying to eat healthier or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. The Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars have the perfect balance of sweet and salty, that sweet and savory deliciousness. They have a good crunch, that crunch that you crave because of the whole nuts and seeds, but they manage to be soft and chewy, and they come in delicious flavors like caramel sea salt and peanut butter dark chocolate. My favorite is caramel sea salt. It's so delicious, and they're perfect for a quick snack or to indulge your sweet tooth without any guilt. And since they're packed with protein, they're actually filling and satisfying. In addition to being keto-friendly, they are gluten-free, plant-based, non-GMO. They have no soy, no trans fats, no sugar alcohols, and no artificial colors. I am crazy about the Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars. So to make sure I'm always fully stocked, I signed up for a subscription to my favorite flavors, which also saves me 10% on every order and ships to me automatically. So getting these delicious treats delivered to me on a regular basis and being fully stocked has been a total game changer in my effort to eat healthier. So try it for yourself. We have a special deal for listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CLEANUP at checkout. And Monk Pack is so confident in their product. It has a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll either exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So there's no risk here. So to get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's MUNKPACK.com. Select any product, enter the code CLEANUP, all one word at checkout, and you'll save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to CLEANUP on L45. We have CLEANUP stuff going on. Last week, the Biden administration issued rules to shield Americans from large unexpected medical bills after patients wind up in emergency rooms or receive other care they didn't realize wasn't covered by their insurance. I'm sure this happens to everybody. You know, I've seen it.
To real people. And interesting how nothing happened on that front for 4 years during which a certain former person was in office. But yes, these are the first in a series of coordinated steps that four different federal agencies are required to take to set in motion rulemaking pursuant to a law that Congress adopted last year to protect healthcare consumers against a practice known as surprise billing. Okay, so the rules are set to begin on January 2022. And they spell out that if a healthcare plan provides for emergency services, they have to be covered without pre-approval from the carrier.
Yeah, and you're right. This, we didn't see it for 4 years, mysteriously missing. This is so long overdue. And these rules also state that no matter whether the emergency room OR or its doctors are part of the network, the patients can't be charged more than if the services were in-network. In other words, patients can't be billed for the difference between what the hospital charges and what an insurance company pays for out-of-network care. That's huge. That is massive.
Yeah, it really is. And to take it a step further, those rules also ban higher charges for when ancillary care is out-of-network. Like, you know how if you have surgery and your surgeon is in-network, but the anesthesiologist or the assistant surgeon is out of network, and then the insurance company charges you extra for the assistants that are, they can't do that anymore either.
I can't believe they were able to do that in the first fucking place. Like, you telling me that surgeon here is, but the guy standing next to him, you know, with the laughing gas is not wrong. That's just ridiculous. Well, now they can't overcharge you for that. And all this comes, like you said, from the No Surprises Act as part of the COVID relief that the former guy actually signed into law around Christmas last year. And Health and Human Services Secretary said, Congress actually got something good done, calling the provisions as meaningful as anything we've done on health care since the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, I am proud of both of our respective coverage of that December bill at a time when some of the folks on our side were saying, you know, are we sure that this is and the answer was, yeah. Democrats wrote a lot of the provisions that were in that December bill, and it was worth getting as much relief as we could. And then, you know, did we get more when Biden took off? Absolutely. But, you know, you get what you get. So here's the way it breaks down. Health and Human Services is the main department that wrote the surprise billing rules, but they need to coordinate those with the departments of Labor and Treasury, as well as the Office of Personnel Management, because the protections are going to apply to federal employees' health benefits as well.
Ah, that's so great. but there's a little question. This is the legal details that I know you love about how to solve disputes. Law caught, like, if you're going, no, you know what, that anesthesiologist is definitely, you need to pay, the law calls for outside arbiters to resolve disputes over how much insurers must pay hospitals. The arbitration method was favored by the hospital industry and opposed by the insurance industry. Now, arbitration won out over another approach that would have resolved billing disputes through benchmarks consisting of the typical price a given insurer pays for a medical service. That's probably what, let me guess, the insurance companies wanted that. Yes. And, you know, based on geographic medical services in a geographic area. The law, however, does not specify who the arbitrator should be. So we got the arbitration, but we don't know who the arbitrators are. Now, that decision has been delegated to Health and Human Services to come up with that before the ban takes effect in January.
Yeah, and I love the way that you have unpacked that. Obviously, right, the hospitals want this to be arbitration because in arbitration, both parties pay not only their legal fees, but they split the cost for the arbitrator or arbitrators to read all the briefs and issue all the rulings. It adds on a layer of transaction costs, and insurance companies do not want to incur extra transaction costs, right? So this encourages insurance companies to be reasonable, right? So as to not push the hospitals to the point where they're like, all right, we're just going to have to take this to arbitration. And again, hospitals are not especially litigious, right? Like these are entities that are pretty risk averse. So if you've pushed a hospital to the point where they have to file for arbitration, you're probably in the wrong. So that's really the significance on the choice of relief. And then you are 100% correct. You know, who the arbitrators become is a real issue. For example, right, like, you know, we have arbitration agencies that are, you know, really the gold standard, right, like the American Arbitration Association, 100% independent, you know, mostly retired judges. And if I had to take a guess, that's what I think will be put in, like an outside arbitration capable of providing experts that can handle these disputes. But that will be covered in other rules issued by the departments before January. So we're going to have to put a pin in the story and come back to it. But again, right, the question is, how good a news is this? And I love being able to finally bring those out. So on to the next story. Last Friday, the Biden administration announced its plan to bring hundreds, possibly thousands, of deported veterans and their immediate family members back to the United States, saying that their removal, quote, failed to live up to our highest values. And I thought perhaps you might have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think it fails to live up to our lowest values, actually. but I know what they're getting at. You know, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas has ordered his immigration agencies to immediately take steps to ensure that military families can return to the United States. And that's that. You know, of course, I have massive feelings about this, you know.
Yeah. And it's not just a July 4th stunt, right? He also halted all pending deportation proceedings against veterans and their immediate family members, and to clear the way for them to apply for citizenship. So, I hope we are moving towards a position where, you know, veterans are not a lockstep political football for the party that treats them so badly.
But yes, and it will all go away if you don't vote in 2022.
put that on the outro bumper. Anyway, officials said that they would also work with the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Defense Department to ensure that those veterans can access their health benefits, including COVID vaccinations, that recruits can take the oath of citizenship, including while at basic training, and that DHS will establish a military resource center online with a toll-free number. Well, that's quaint. And an email address to help families with their immigration applications.
Yeah, that's such good news. And I love that. And I'm glad they're working with the VA to ensure that they can get immediate access to their health benefits.
Yeah.
Also, that's very cool. Recruits at boot camp can take their citizenship oath. Not after.
Yeah.
Right? Before. Before you start. Anyway, such good news. Now, I have a personal cleanup note.
Ooh.
Yeah. Thanks to a policy change by the Biden administration, I received a notice today that my student loans have been entirely discharged.
Okay. You've got to share that.
I will. So I got this note. Now, I just recently, veterans are disabled when they become disabled because of something that happened to them in the service. They're called service-connected mm-hmm. disabilities. And so, you know, my PTSD, my anxiety, all that comes from what I experienced when I was in the military. And a lot of people know about that story. But basically, I recently went to 100% permanent and total disability mm-hmm. from Department of Veterans Affairs. And I was automatically sent a letter saying, you are 100%. Now, before, if you were 100% disabled, you could apply to have your student loans discharged, forgiven, completely forgiven.
Okay.
But you had to show that you were destitute, that you couldn't make any money, and that you were fully living off government assistance. Biden waived that rule.
Oh, wow.
And so I received a note that said your student loans have been discharged unless you would like to continue paying your student loans. You have to let us know by August 21st.
If you want the privilege of continuing to pay.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you do nothing, the default here, another Biden rule, is that they will be forgiven. So,
well, that is fantastic. I mean, I'm glad. I mean, I think it needs to be expanded beyond the
yes.
Allison rule here.
Yes. I actually just wrote a whole op-ed that I'm shopping out, that because I have the benefit of free healthcare and free education, and not just veterans should get this. It shouldn't just be for veterans. Same with the student loan forgiveness. And Elizabeth Warren, she's so fucking great. She snuck in a provision. She didn't sneak in. Everybody read it. But she put a provision in the American Rescue Plan, the first COVID bill that Biden passed, to say that $50,000 of student loan forgiveness for anyone in the United States would be tax-free. Because, you know, if you get a loan forgiven, you end up having to pay taxes on it. And so that's in there as prep for erasing those student loans. And Biden's been taking chunks out here and there, 100% disabled veterans, you get your loans. People at ITT, you get your loans. You know, the people Betsy DeVos fucked over, you get your loans forgiven. I'm waiting for him. I think I have a very positive feeling. He has the ability to waive $50,000 for everyone without it going through Congress. At least that's my understanding. And the setup for it being tax-free is already in the American Rescue Plan. I think he's just going to wait for a politically advantageous moment, like, I don't know, right before 2022, maybe right before 2024. I wish he didn't wait, but right now all student loans are deferred anyway because of COVID. But I have a feeling he's going to do this. The signs are there. He's chipping away at everyone else on the ancillary, on the sidelines, like sort of on the fringe. I think, and if they've got that provision, I think it's going to happen.
Well, I let's hope so. I want to share that optimism. I am pleased that we have an administration that acknowledges it's a problem rather than is staffed by people who profit off the fact that it's a problem. So, you know, that's it's turning away from making it worse and turning towards making it better. We'll have to see. But that's our show for today. So. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I want to give a special shout out again to our patrons. You make this possible. You make the show go. Until next week, I'm Andrew Torres.
And I'm Allison Gill, and this is Clean Up on Aisle 45. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com.
Season 4 of How We Win is here.
For the past 4 years, we've been making history in critical elections all over the country. And last year, we made history again by expanding our majority in the Senate, beating election-denying Republicans in crucial state house races, and fighting back a non-existent red wave.
But the MAGA Republicans who plotted and pardoned the attempted overthrow of our government now control the House, thanks to gerrymandered maps and repressive anti-voter laws. And the chaotic spectacle we've already seen shows us just how far they will go to seize power, dismantle our government, and take away our freedoms.
So the official podcast of The Persistence is back with season 4. There's so much more important work ahead of us to fight for equity, justice, and our very democracy itself. We'll take you behind the lines and inside the rooms where it happens with strategy and inspiration from progressive changemakers all over the country.
And we'll dig deep into the weekly news that matters most and what you can do about it with messaging and communications expert, co-founder of Way to Win, and our new co-host, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
So join Steve and I every Wednesday for your weekly dose of inspiration, action, and hope.
I'm Steve Pearson.
And I'm Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
And this is How We Win.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.